Next case for argument this morning is Magala against Gonzalez. Mr. Trace.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is David Trace, and I'm one of the attorneys for the petitioner, Olga Magala. This case comes before this Court on appeal of a final order of the Board of Immigration of Appeals. Their decision denied the petitioner's motion to reopen, which had argued ineffective assistance of counsel. The petitioner is asking this Court today to remand the matter back to the Board so that the petitioner's application to adjust status can be heard on the merits. The petitioner, Olga Magala, has been living in the United States since December 1993. She's married to a United States citizen, Michael Baratz, and they were married May 24, 2002. The petitioner's teenage daughter is a permanent resident of the United States, as is the petitioner's mother. This case is really about how a person can be so severely prejudiced by performance of counsel that they go from being prima facie eligible to adjust their status to being statutorily barred from adjusting status and never having their application to adjust status adjudicated on the merits. Excuse me. This case is also about how at times the Board of Immigration Appeals can misinterpret or misapply the facts in such a manner that leads to a reasonable or a rational decision. In the record, there are a slew of admissions by former counsel of the mistakes he made in handling Ms. Magala's case. While there are many errors, some of the key errors really relate to his actions.
What relief did you ask the board to provide in this case?
For the ineffective assistance of counsel, we asked that.
But what relief? Ineffective assistance is a reason for relief. What relief was requested?
The relief requested was that the matter be remanded to the immigration judge, that the application be heard on the merits.
See, that's what troubles me. I could understand here a request that the board reinstate a period of voluntary departure. If the problem with what the lawyer did is the lawyer didn't keep the client up to date with the period of voluntary departure, then a request for reinstatement of that would be a remedy. But it looks like the request made before the board and the request being made now is not permit me to depart voluntarily and then I will apply for adjustment of status from abroad. The request is permit me to stay in the United States forever. And that's, right, it in other words, conveys the message that your client has had then and has now no intention whatever of voluntarily departing.
Well, Your Honor, Ms. Magala has always complied with the law, and it's really, while preferably...
Is there any reason why you didn't ask the board to reinstate the period of voluntary departure so that your client could then depart and retain her eligibility to apply from abroad?
Your Honor, certainly we would have welcomed that or entered...
It's not a question of what you would have welcomed. You never asked. It's very hard to complain that the board did not provide relief that was never requested. The relief that was requested does not appear to be related to helping your client achieve voluntary departure.
No, correct. The relief requested is related more to allowing the client to adjust her status here in the United States.
And that case that was just sent back, that Second Circuit case, for the board to determine what exceptional circumstances are in light of problems with counsel, has that been briefed yet? I know that decision came down October 5th.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I don't know which case.
That was a case that was remanded to determine whether the failure of the alien's lawyer to inform her of voluntary departure of the voluntary departure order constituted an exceptional circumstance that might warrant reconsideration for the adjustment of her status. That came down October 5th. I just wondered if that had been briefed, if a schedule had been set.
No, Your Honor, I don't know. Some of the key errors by former counsel were rather routine. Went to routine matters that go to, with the motion to reopen, attaching an application for adjustment of status, and which he failed to do. And it was then that the board granted voluntary departure. That was April 2nd, 2003. He reports he discussed options with Ms. Magala in May 2003. The departure, of course, the window for departure being only 30 days. He admits to never filing an extension for voluntary departure. And he also admits to not really understanding the law, and that he thought that when he would file his motion to reopen, that would somehow toll the clock for voluntary departure, which it does not. Now, inexplicably, the board's decision, at the time they had all of these facts before them, and yet they seem to have deviated from their own precedent in Lozada when they simply dismissed it by saying that failing to attach an application to the motion to reopen is not an effective assistance of counsel. And they also noted that the statement made to the ARDC by former counsel refuted the assertion that Ms. Magala wasn't notified of the order to voluntarily depart, when in fact it says he did not do so until May. And unless the panel has any other questions, I'd like to take whatever time's left to reserve it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Wang.
May it please the court. My name is Christopher Wang. I represent respondent Alberto Gonzalez in this matter. The first point I would like to make to the court is that this is on a denial of a motion to reopen, which this court reviews for abuse of discretion. The Supreme Court has held that motions to reopen are particularly disfavored in removal proceedings. I submit that that is even more the case in a case where, such as this, where the alien is claiming ineffective assistance of counsel. This court has held that whether there exists a constitutional...
One would think that that's topsy-turvy. Ineffective assistance of counsel in proceeding number one can't be raised in proceeding number one. That's the very nitwit of a lawyer who's committing it, right? Ineffective assistance of counsel is going to be raised by motion to reopen or not at all. So why should it be especially disfavored?
Your Honor, this court has held that whether there exists a constitutional...
Tell me what this court has held. I'm asking you for a reason. You made a proposition that these kinds of motions should be more disfavored than other motions to reopen. I'm asking why that should be so.
I would contend that's consistent with this court's case law. I would agree with Your Honor that it's...
I'm asking for a functional reason. Is there a reason?
Your Honor, not a functional reason, no. I would agree that motions to reopen are the place where one would assert an ineffective assistance
the
of counsel claim. That's correct. This court has held that ineffective assistance of counsel, whether there exists a right to ineffective assistance of counsel is virtually foreclosed, and to the extent that it can be raised, it must be raised as a Fifth Amendment due process claim. I don't believe that this court has ever expressly held that there exists a Fifth Amendment due process right to effective counsel.
You're leaving me very puzzled.
Yeah.
Fifth Amendment does not force any such doctrine on the board, but the board has recognized such a doctrine as a matter of its administrative authority. Right? It's perfectly free to do so. The Federal Trade Commission could recognize a doctrine of ineffective assistance, even though the Sixth Amendment doesn't apply to civil antitrust proceedings. The question here is whether the board has properly carried out as a matter of administrative law the application of its own doctrine. I don't see how the Constitution gets into this.
Well, Your Honor, it's our belief that to the extent that the board has recognized a right to effective counsel, it did so based on court decisions which were based on the Fifth Amendment due process clause. I believe that's in a footnote
there
somewhere.
There aren't any such decisions, at least in this circuit. Yeah. This circuit has held the Constitution. Removal is a civil proceeding. The Sixth Amendment doesn't apply. But the board is free to have doctrines that are not required by the Constitution. All agencies are free to go beyond what the Constitution requires. Right? And then they have to do so rationally. That's the question here. I wish you would address it.
Your Honor, I haven't done that much research on the administrative authority of the Board of Immigration Appeals to promulgate regulations regarding ineffective assistance of counsel. My belief, it may be erroneous, that it to the extent that the board has recognized such a right, it has cited cases from the Court of Appeals that were based on the Fifth Amendment's due process.
Kind of a reverse Chevron, where agencies are now deferring to the Court of Appeals. We've had this problem with the board before. Chevron on its head. We can call it.
Your Honor, I would. I'm afraid I can't answer your particular question. I would just point to the fact that this particular situation has appeared to arise in several courts of appeals with regard to whether a petitioner may make a claim for ineffective assistance of counsel where the ultimate relief requested is discretionary, and I would refer this court to the Nativi Gomez case from the Eighth Circuit, which appears to be very much on point, in which a petitioner was claiming ineffective assistance of counsel because counsel failed to apply for the relief of adjustment of status, and in that case the Eighth Circuit held that because the alien has no liberty or property interest in the relief of adjustment of status, the alien could not make out an ineffective assistance of counsel claim.
But don't we have to also analyze her situation here under the voluntary departure statute that was in effect at the time of that the order to show cause was issued?
You do, Your Honor.
And, I mean, isn't this an exceptional circumstance, given that the lawyer failed to provide her with that information, and that information was critical?
I would agree that this factual situation certainly gives one pause. I believe the decision...
One pause? Yes. This was the end of the story for her, wasn't it?
It was. It's The factual record is a little bit ambiguous as to whether when former attorney Thorin met with petitioner Magala to discuss her situation. The order of the board came down on April 2nd, 2003, and his affidavit says that he discussed her case with her in May 2003. And later in the affidavit, he mentions discussing the case with her in late May 2003. So it's a little bit unclear to me as to whether there was a meeting before the order of voluntary departure went into effect. But to the extent that this court is troubled by this particular factual circumstance, I would contend that whether this case has met the exceptional circumstances exception to the order of voluntary departure seems to be a very fact-bound inquiry for the board to consider all the circumstances. But in response to your Honor's earlier question about the Second Circuit case, I am aware that that's the Zimajewski case, which came down October 6th. I just found that case fairly recently while I was doing research for this case, and I don't know if it was briefed by the parties yet.
Yeah, well, when you look at the error, I mean, I understand that Thorin kind of flip-flops a little, but those other two errors, he clearly concedes, doesn't he?
That he failed to extend the period of voluntary departure and that he failed to submit a...
Yes.
I would contend that the error of not submitting an application for adjustment of status was remedied when the board specifically said in a footnote that he could file a motion to reopen with a completed application for adjustment of status, and in fact, that's indeed what former attorney Thorne did.
Yeah, but it certainly gives an indication that he was not one to pay attention to details. In fact, he didn't even know, it seems, what some of the details were.
I would agree that Petitioner Magala was not well served by her attorney in this matter, and there do seem to be some irregularities with his performance. I guess the main point that we're raising here is that even if you take all these errors that Attorney Thorne committed, that it still doesn't make out a due process violation under this court's precedence of the sister circuits. Again, I would point this court to Nativi Gomez because ultimately Petitioner Magala is requesting the relief of adjustment of status to which she has no protected liberty or property interest. I see that my time is about running out. I'm free to answer any of the panel's questions if it has any additional ones. If it doesn't, I'll rest on the briefs and request that the court affirm the Board of Immigration Appeals.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Wang. Mr. Perkins, anything further?
Just wanted to raise a couple of points that came up. Opposing counsel's relying on the Gomez case, which is a criminal case, first of all, where there also was no approval of the marriage petition. And in this case, when you file a motion to remand, proceedings are still active, you have an approved I-130, you've met the requirements, the cases are typically remanded.
Could you use fewer code words? What is an I-130?
That's a marriage petition, Your Honor. I apologize. I guess I'm steeped in the field of immigration law.
A petition for adjustment of status because of marriage to a citizen.
Okay. Well, there's two applications. There's one that's...
The fewer acronyms and numbers you use, the easier it will be to follow.
Apologize for that, Your Honor. But one is the marriage petition, which is the I-130 that was approved at the time that, in this case, that the motion to remand was filed. And usually those are remanded to consider whether this relief should be granted by the immigration judge. And you see in a couple of cases that we've cited, in the Chowdhury case and the Singh case, they're not criminal cases, that, you know, the courts seem to indicate that, you know, reopening ought to be, or remand ought to be granted. Also, I wanted to point out that, you know, in this case also, the motion filed by Thorin, ineffective assistance motion, the other motion with the application wasn't even filed until June, which was well after the voluntary departure expired in this case. So I have nothing further.
Mm-hmm. That's just... Well, thank you very much, Mr. Perkins. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.